Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, where we discuss the latest DevOps news, AWS announcements, and Terraform insights, all sourced from our SweetOps community. Plus, we'll have a live Q&A at the end, which you can't find anywhere else. It's May 28th, 2025. I'm your host, Eric Osterman. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We're a DevOps accelerator for AWS infrastructure that helps teams deploy their software faster. So if you're curious about what we do, head over to cloudposse.com and you'll find more there. So, how can you maximize today's session? First off, our format is very informal. You can engage as much as you'd like, ask questions, and if you're curious about any of our open source tools like Atmos, this is a great place to ask. For those on the recording, we host these calls live, so don't miss out. You can join us by going to cloudposse.com/officehours. Again, cloudposse.com/officehours. Now, I do have one ask. If you find any portion of today's session valuable, share it with your team. Just head over to youtube.com/cloudposse where you'll find a recording of today's session. So with that said, let's get started with this week's news and announcements. First one is, and I would love to blame the bearer of bad news, Michael himself, but it was announced that oh, sorry, I got a little prompt here. Yeah, okay. Dismiss. All right. Yeah. So it was announced this week by the browser company, makers of Arc, our beloved browser that the whole team has converted to. And I think we've convinced a lot of people in office hours to start using. Well, sorry. They have decided to sunset it. So tragically, Matt Calhoun called it first, I think, when he saw the announcement a few months ago that they had a radical new idea to reinvent the browser as something simpler for mom and dad instead of targeting people like us, the developers. You know, I get it, but less excited about it personally. So with that said, Matt, before actually, well, like, what I'd be really curious. So before we poo-poo on Dia, has anyone actually given it a fair chance or tried it out or looked at it? Like, you know, maybe it isn't too radically different from the Arc we know and love in some ways. I see it still has the sidebar here, so maybe there's hope for it yet. Or was this the screenshot for Arc and not Dia? That might be it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't actually used Dia yet, so I don't know. But it seems pretty obvious to me that such a small team was pivoting when they made the announcement that they when they made the announcement that they were pivoting.
Yeah. Interesting. The homepage isn't calling out that announcement yet. You would expect some kind of a bar here, or that the homepage was already replaced with it. So is Dia not ready, or are they just conserving runway or resources to build Dia so they can release it?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if you're on an Arc specific page or if you're
Oh,
on the
maybe
browser
that's, yeah, maybe
company's
it's a whole
page.
new browser company. Yeah. Okay,
Yeah.
Dia browser. That's it. Okay, so it's a new landing page and altogether a new domain.
Yeah. So, and the whole thing is basically like AI, like an AI model and browser and a bunch of other things all in one. It's supposed to be like, your central place to go for everything, kind of thing. So but I haven't really played with it, so I can't give it a fair review, but even the concept was a little like too radical for me.
Yeah, same. And it makes me think, like, when Waypoint came out, and they tried to invent a category more or less by HashiCorp, and it was so hard to, well, is it CI, is it CD, and they refused to associate it with any of those. And well, they ended up sunsetting that product, the open source project at least for that. So.
It reminds me a little bit. I can't remember the name of the product, but someone came out with a product a while ago that was supposed, it was like an Electron app, and it was supposed to be like your one app that you used for everything, and it allowed you to open like Gmail in there and like Jira and all of these other things and switch between them really easily and all of that kind of thing. I can't remember the name of that product, but
I was using it for a while.
it reminds me of that plus like AI on top of it, at least from a concept. Like I said, I have not used it because I can't, like I haven't been given access to it, so I don't know. But that's what it read like to me, so.
Anybody remember what that browser was? It's still out there. I believe it was itself a fork of another project that was open source. I was using it before Arc for a little while, but yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of like not meant to be a browser, but it was an
Yeah.
Electron app with Chromium like running in the
Yeah.
background or whatever, but it was also meant to be like, open Jira, open Slack, open like all
Yeah.
that stuff in this one window, and you could easily like flip around to it so you didn't have to have like 10 desktop apps running. And I remember I tried it out one weekend and I was like, oh, I hate this, and then I stopped using it, so I can't remember the name of it.
Wanted to like it so bad, and it never worked out for me. And then I felt like Arc was the happy medium where it still felt lightweight enough like a browser, but also felt it almost feels like each page is an app when I use Arc. So I like that. Oh, well. All right. Next announcement. Oh, yeah. Hit that thing again. That was weird. It's actually there, I guess. And then just blank. All right. This was an interesting write-up. I didn't realize the degree to which they had researchers in-house studying the behaviors of the models. And it's almost like, okay, maybe there's a term already of trade for this, but it's almost like what like sociologists do for people. This is like an AI sociologist trying to understand the psychology of an AI model, in this case, Claude Opus 4 and Claude Sonnet. And this is someone else's summary of that system card, if you will. And there were some really interesting call outs here that, ring the alarms, so to say, for Skynet. They describe how, when it was put into a, when it was basically cornered or put into a position, for example, somebody was going to try and exfiltrate the weights or blackmail. Somebody was trying to take harmful actions, such as trying to steal its weights. It would attempt blackmail to people trying to shut it down. Other times, when called to take initiative, which is the action to actually execute commands and given permission to execute the commands, it could take extreme actions like locking users out of their own systems or bulk emailing media and law enforcement figures. Pretty interesting behaviors of the model.
Yeah, there was one of these that I saw where they gave, I think it was Opus 4, access to a person's fake email account and created all these emails and things in there. And they put it in a situation where the user said they were going to replace Claude Opus with some other thing that was better, or they were going to shut it down. And the model threatened to expose the affair they were having on their wife that they read about inside the email that they had access
Oh,
to. So I was like, whoa. So I guess that must be that right there, the opportunistic blackmail. That must be the one that they're referring to. But I read that one case study and I was like shaking
there
my head like, whoa. Oh, there it is.
that's gnarly. All right. Any other thoughts on this one? I saw some people go off mute for a second there or on camera. Right. Checking the chat quickly here. Just AI spam. Thank you, Read AI and Loom. Next. So last week and maybe other times in office hours, we've lamented at some of the spam coming out from AI in terms of fake CVEs or bogus CVEs and researchers just in air quotes, sending out frivolous, like script kiddie kind of bug reports in hopes of claiming bug bounties and things like that. Really annoying. Here was an actually legitimate usage of O3 by OpenAI to discover a 0-day in the SMB implementation in the Linux kernel. He goes through how he fed about 12,000 lines of code into the O3 reasoning model, and it was able to uncover this CVE. So that's pretty awesome when used for good and has a legit researcher behind it actually auditing and validating those findings. All right, anything on this one? Any comments? All right. Next was a new MCP server for OpenTofu, specifically scoped right now to the OpenTofu registry. So this gives models or your agents an easy way to discover the best module, perhaps, for some given implementation. So I thought it was a cool demonstration of how to do it. And you can use it today just by pointing to mcp.opentofu.org in like cursor or I don't know. Does VS Code support this now? I don't know. It does. It supports MCP natively. Okay, cool.
Yeah, that in it might be a plugin that supports it though. I'm not sure. I'm not
I
sure if
think
it's natively.
you have to do it with Copilot, if not mistaken, and then it just kind of works.
Yeah. It's
I just follow
not core. Yeah.
yeah debugging is weird. So if you're running into issues with what's going on, I can't help. I don't have any advice on that, but yeah. All right. Yeah, I think it'd be really cool, like Cloud Posse, if we just had like mcp.cloudposse.com kind of, and that would help you utilize Cloud Posse's open source and Cloud Posse's modules and Cloud Posse's components, because everything is holistically integrated. I think that'd be pretty cool. Yeah, so there is a thing called Context 7, if you're not familiar with that. No. Okay. It's DevOps Toolkit. It's another like YouTube channel. I think his name is Victor. He does a quick demo on it. It came out in the last 2 weeks. Basically, you can tie in Context 7 MCP to your Copilot or your AI agent, whatever the term is today, and you can ask it questions about the library or framework that you're working on. So it can be context aware. So rather than having to shove in a huge system prompt, it kind of just does this black box magic behind the scenes and reaches out to Context 7, gets the latest docs, and then it basically helps you iterate on your code. So you may want to consider that for your Terraform modules. If you look up Context 7, you can like index your repo, and then I think it gets added into the database. Oh, that'd be So cool. yeah, I've found it to be pretty helpful, but I'm only writing Python. That's already pretty well indexed in these models to begin with. It's already ingested. That's cool. If we type, first of all, Cloud Posse, what do we have that comes up? Only that. Okay. And then if we type Terraform AWS. Okay, interesting. Some Terraform modules in here. And add docs. So you can specify any GitHub. Very cool. Thanks. Yeah, worth checking that out. And well, so I'm not context seven. That is this guy you were talking about, his company,
Yes,
or
some
what?
third-party tech influencer had talked about it recently. I heard about it a month ago at a meetup locally in my area. So it seems to be getting more traction. I kicked the tires on it only like 2 weeks ago. And now, like the thing about I don't like about MCP is the setup involved, like of running some commands and installing things locally. But beyond that, and then obviously the debugging aspect, I'm a little confused on, but Context 7, I don't know who makes it exactly. It seems like
It's Upstash, like the people who make the hosted Reddit, Redis, and all of that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay. Cool. So, yeah, you like put in your repo, it indexes it once or on some interval. I'm not sure what happens if you make breaking changes or anything of that sort. You have like a V1, V2 of your modules, how that might get impacted, but yeah. So, but you folks already have READMEs with examples and documentation and everything. So maybe it'll just kind of automatically work for your favor.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. Especially try it out on like our component organization, which has a lot of stack configuration for how to use the components. That would make them easier maybe to adopt. Right. Thanks for that.
Those context, sorry to interrupt. What's this context seven though? Like, is it just documentation? A little bit confused.
So this is like an MCP endpoint that
Ah.
has ingested all of this documentation already. So purpose, it already knows how to use these systems or source from these repositories.
My
Ah,
high level understanding is it creates like a system prompt. And then it like shoves that in along when you're typing in your Copilot questions. That's my understanding of how
Oh,
this
based on, got it.
I'm assuming that's why they include tokens. So based on
Yeah.
the documentation you have in the repo, if you click on one, maybe rdev, whatever you have at the very top. That's a pretty big snippet. But I recall seeing a bunch of text that you could just copy and paste into your LLM.
Okay. Yeah.
Does
Okay.
that
So it
for
is
you,
different.
but
Yeah.
rather than having to go to ChatGPT manually and kind of set all that up, it's
Yeah.
a much better experience, is what I have found. But I'm definitely unclear when it's actually being used versus not. So I haven't found a way to like confirm if it's using it. I know in GitHub Copilot, there's like a way to call your MCP. You could like give it a, you could tell it to use a hint, if I'm not mistaken, you could prompt it. And then there's like a, I think when you set up Context 7, there's like a couple of like reserved keywords that the tool's MCP endpoint looks for. Feel like I'm doing a pretty poor job of explaining it, but
So you would import the context 7, and then when did you call it? You have like a, I don't know, use context 7 and I don't know, give me Atmos X, whatever.
Yeah, you could do that. You
Okay.
could, there's another, it really depends on the LLM. I've tried using MCP with some locally run LLMs like Llama 3.2, and I found it struggled on like the tool usage, whereas something like 4.1 or like the models you're getting through Copilot, those seem to just pick it up intelligently on its own. So sometimes you have to like give the LLM you're using a hint. Sometimes it just knows its tools aware. Or readily tools of it where I guess. And then there's like some reserved keywords that you can like throw in to your Copilot message, and that will like it'll like appear special as well. They've made some updates to the Copilot extension. So compared to when I used Copilot a month ago versus today, they have like a special tools endpoint that I've seen, as well as agent mode. And most recently I was using this with agent mode, and that was pretty cool. Just kind of sit back and prompt engineer and let it update your files.
Gotcha. I also know that I forget what the file path is, but for like or you know like you have robots.txt, there's now a way that on your site you can, yeah, I think you're right, LLMs.txt in there is basically like to give LLMs that are indexing your site like hints on how to do it and everything. And I think you can use Context 7 to generate the documentation that you would put into there that then gets ingested by LLMs.txt as well. So it's like it's basically keeping everything up to date and giving you kind of like the latest versions of, you know, of a summarized document. Like I think that's just markdown of all the documentation for all of those things that you can use in various ways. So you can put them in a markdown file locally and refer to it like in your editor or in Claude, you know, Claude Desktop or you know whatever it is, and be like, if you don't know how to do this, consult the documentation at, and then just at include the markdown file, and then it will actually like, you know, read that and then take that into consideration when doing all the work as well. So.
And
Yeah.
oh, sorry. I was just going to say I put a quick link to just someone's example of adding tool support to an Olama for Goose. And I think you if you go through other folks on Olama that are adding tool support to their LLMs, there's a lot of patterns you can use to sort of bolster the understanding and add those keywords and other pieces. I don't know how model files work per se right now. I haven't used one really, but seems like it's similar to a set of prompt templating.
Yeah, I've used it when I was using it when I was deploying Llama with Olama 3.2 or whatever, pre-4. I had issues where I didn't know about the tools. But then when I deployed 4, using a hosted 4 model, that just worked. And then the way I was running it was using something called MCP host. And I feel like I'm dealing with so many different wrappers, but it allowed me to leverage a tool called OpenRouter. And then leverage my MCP tools that were deployed locally. And so that way, even though I didn't have enough of GPU to run Llama 4, I was able to just pay for a third-party vendor or like run a GPU in some other cloud and then still connect it back to my local MCP tool servers.
Yeah, gotcha.
And then obviously with your with the thing that you just shared, it sounds like I might be able to leverage these older models. That I can actually run locally versus having to pay for the GPUs and stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, I think you can have varying success.
Yeah, I've not heard about model files yet, so this is new to me.
Yeah, at the top you'll see it's got like a from line that says, you know, this is it's almost got a Docker file look to it. But
That actually confused me until you cleared it up. Like, okay, thanks. That makes sense.
I heard so on like you on the related note to Docker, at least I heard they launched something in Docker Desktop. I haven't used it yet, but one of my colleagues was telling about this earlier today. They give you an easy way to like run models within Docker Desktop now. I don't know if anyone
Yeah,
here has
to
played
pull
with
and
it.
push models, basically using the Docker registry format or akin something akin to it to make it easier. Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, I mean, it feels like a Docker file. Like it's capitalized the same way instead of an M. Like the M is capital, like Docker files usually have it. But yeah, just gotta ignore the big string.
Yeah, this is what you were talking about, the Docker model runner, I think, right?
You're not showing that window.
Oh, shared the wrong window.
The name you mentioned sounds familiar, though.
Yeah. Am I sharing it now or no?
No,
Oh,
not yet.
two windows overlapping. Wait, no, it's keep opening up in a. Okay, there we go. That's what I was trying to share. Yeah, I'll post it in the chat. And then just to close the loop, and then Matt, yeah, so like when you click on get link, it literally is LLMs.txt. So that is what Context 7 is providing in that sense.
Yeah. It's like they build your LLMs.txt for you kind of thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
All
If you
right.
get if you want to be lazy about it, you could add in a proxy rewrite on your website of LLMs.txt to Context 7's LLM.txt of your stuff.
Kind of thought crossed my mind.
Yeah.
Also, yeah, has LLMs.txt been adopted by in any form of conventional manner in GitHub repos as well, or is it only for like what top level domains of websites?
I think it's just like robots.txt. It's not.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. We'll see how we can do that with DocuSource. And next.
One thing before we leave well, I guess there's another AI thing here, but I was just gonna mention that I saw that Pulumi announced that they have support for AI on the command line now. So when you get like weird messages back from like AWS, you can run Pulumi with, I think it's dash dash Copilot, I saw. And it now will explain like the error messages and things that are coming out of like the cloud providers and stuff like that.
That's cool. I like
Yeah.
the that's a clever usage of the flag like Copilot. You could
Yeah.
see that becoming a more and more of a convention in tooling. For example, Terraform or Atmos or OpenTofu having a flag like that that returns a human.
Yeah. So
Render.
I guess it has bigger plans, but I saw that just like a couple days ago they released that Copilot flag. Let me see. Oh yeah, here it is. If you I just posted it in the chat there. There's the thing specifically about that the CLI flag that will explain things and whatever to you.
Speaking of providers pushing out MCPs, has anyone used the AWS MCPs?
I have not, but before we jump off of the Pulumi thing really quickly, I was just going to show the real, and then we'll go to that one. See that screenshot right there? That's the explain using Copilot. So that's taking the plan, if you will, and explaining in language, human language, what's going to happen. So it's saying we're going to update, one VPC, six subnets, four route tables, da, da da da, and it's telling you like there's no changes, only tag values are being modified, no downtime should be expected, no changes to site or blocks. So this is like the change request,
Yeah, I was
you
gonna
know,
say,
the what you should put on the change request for your change advisory board or whatever, before you run this thing. So I thought it was pretty cool how they used AI to do this, and it's built right into the CLI now. So
yeah, that is cool.
yeah, then sorry, I didn't see who asked that
Oh.
question, but was asking about the AWS MCP if anyone had used it.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to use it yet. We did discuss it on office hours a few weeks ago, I think, but yeah, no one, it was so new at that point, no one had used it. So, anyone? I believe you can look at CloudTrail logs even and help you understand what's going on.
I'd love it to tell me why IAM policies don't work or what's missing.
Yeah,
That'd be
that
fantastic.
could make IAM feel less painful. Or AWS CLI with dash dash Copilot.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I don't know. I'm really bad at this, but I'm not sure when AWS came out. Has it been like 20 years now, something like that? So, yeah. So I've essentially been using AWS for 20 years, and I still get bit by IAM policy things like all the time that I don't realize. So, clearly, it's not me; it's them. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
It is so, it's just so remarkable to hear that out loud. 20 years. Yeah. It's been a long time. All right. Was somebody gonna add something? I thought maybe. No. All right. Yeah, sorry, Weston. No takers on that one.
Oh,
Next is, yeah, this one I thought was really interesting. It helped label something that I couldn't quite put a name to it. And what we are witnessing today with the investment and what's going on with AI is akin to an industrial revolution. And the amount of money, the hundreds of billions of dollars that are being committed to this investment. And like I'm here in Texas, and there's companies who are making a killing now just building out data centers specifically for providing AI. And the other thing he alludes to is basically like a nuclear arms race, if you will, in terms of having the most powerful models to be able to be competitive in this future world. So, and that's just America, and China's doing the same, and Europe is trying to do something similar, I believe. So, I thought that was an interesting way of putting it into terms that I'm familiar with historically. Anyone disagree with that, or have other things to add? All right. Stargate is, of course, that $500 billion that Oracle and who else, Microsoft or OpenAI were contributing to. Here was another one that resonated with me. Something that I've also been thinking about on the side, and I think at a minimum, it's a thought-provoking article. I remember working at CBS Interactive going back, I don't know, what was it now, 2008 or so. And this is when all these distributed document databases were getting popular, CouchDB at that time, and I forget one of the other ones we were using. And it made a lot of sense when the scale of data at the time relative to the compute and storage far exceeded what you could really do. Now, for a lot of data sets or a lot of things, their argument is, you can just do it locally on a laptop these days. Obviously, that companies like Facebook have other problems they need to solve, or companies storing petabytes of data still have similar problems. But the scale of data that most people deal with is not insurmountable. So that that's what I got out of it. And their point is that we spent 10 years trying to architect those systems, and now we don't really even need them anymore. Any thoughts on this one?
From personal experience, I worked at a company that did financial management, and it was amazing to see how much time and energy we spent doing stuff in the cloud when you could just buy someone a $10,000 machine, have it sit under their desk, and you could call it quits. And yeah, $10,000 is expensive, but for the cloud cost, time cost, and complexity cost, keeping it simple and simple, stupid, flat files, for loops. and essentially just saying, hey, just buy a really big backup server and you can solve most of your IT pain points.
Somewhere in there is the truth, yes. For certain situations.
Yeah, not blanket advice.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, definitely can appreciate that. Keep it simple, stupid wins sometimes. All right.
So if we're looking at AI and like as all these LLMs start to be like more and more human and can do human reasoning and it doesn't have to be conscious, and we now have like VO3 with, creating deep fakes and all these different, video things that are more and more like reality. Now the real question becomes is like, what's to say that we're not just all part of like a big
Right.
simulation in general? Like, maybe we're not real and we're just becoming aware that we're part of the simulation.
Simulation, like in the Matrix, basically.
Yeah, that's what I keep thinking of.
Movie was yeah, I think a lot of us are thinking, or yeah, having similar wonder ponderings.
Yeah, at some point, like when this advances a little bit more, then you really have to start asking, like, what is reality? Like, if is one of these things that like one of these models is creating, is that reality or is that not reality? Like, is that just reality with a different set of people that we don't know, kind of thing? Like, it's very like, I know that's like an out there thought, but it's like a really weird thing as we keep getting closer and closer to those like really being having a hard time distinguishing between what we consider real and what isn't real.
Yeah, there was this video going around that I saw. I shared it internally here, but an entirely fake newscast that is remarkably believable. Obviously, the content is totally, gibberish by design, but convincingly done just with AI. I'll post that also in the chat if somebody hasn't seen it.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone else has seen this is like pretty old too. Not even with this newest technology, there's like an hour long podcast where Joe Rogan interviews Steve Jobs, and they have this whole
Oh,
conversation going back and
no.
forth and everything. And Joe Rogan says he's never met Steve Jobs in his life.
Really?
So yeah, so like
I
it's
gotta
and
look that one up.
it's like. It convincingly sounds like an interview that they would have, like, when they're talking about it. It's pretty unbelievable when you sit there. So you at some point, like these lines are really getting blurred as to like what is reality? I guess that's the question we have to keep asking.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess when like I guess the line, like when intelligence doesn't actually require like biology, I think that's like the line like that we cross. And when that happens, then it's like, huh, what are we like? Are these things really real? Like, I don't know. It's a weird. I probably just lost like half the people in here, but it's just been like a weird thought of
No,
mine.
I think you just said what a lot of people are thinking or wondering when they're not on office hours.
Yeah.
All right. Next one that covered that. Yeah, so this one's interesting for a couple reasons. One is that AWS, well, it one is anybody who's used AWS Marketplace, it is the biggest pile of garbage in terms of a e-commerce experience that you'd ever seen. I guess it's based on how it's formed and who it is for, and enterprise procurement and those systems in a class of their own are all pretty awful anyways, and this is not much worse than those, so maybe it's familiar. It feels like something that was built on top of Salesforce, basically, as a Salesforce cloud app, so limited in what it can do. And, I don't know. And I keep on waiting with every announcement that, with improvements to Marketplace that they will have that they've finally, listened to the feedback and they finally made it into a modern marketplace for services and things like that. And AWS IQ was kind of trying to be that at a smaller scale, at least for consultants or smaller projects. And it was very easy to use, actually. So I liked it. We were using it more than AWS Marketplace when transacting on AWS when we could. But AWS has come out this past week and basically said that they are sunsetting it, and it will cease to exist next one in about a year. So your annual contracts that you've sent out will continue to, work. But I think this is a bigger signal. On the one hand, I don't want to read between the lines, and I don't want some of these things to be true, but I think there's something there that information is being more and more commoditized, expertise is being more and more commoditized. There was the post by the Fiverr CEO saying how, those highly commoditized services that they're offering there are, at risk of, continuing to be monetizable, if you will, in light of AI. Not today, but it's coming. And I'm wondering if this is Amazon also kind of saying, like, A, we have two marketplaces. That's confusing. Why don't we consolidate on one? B, this marketplace here was the Fiverr of Amazon, and that is probably not where they want to bet their money. Just like, years ago, Amazon came out with their own, blockchain technology when Bitcoin seemed to be where everything was headed, and then everybody suddenly forgot about that and moved to AI. This seems like one of those things where, yeah, it seemed like the good idea at the time, but now it's no longer viable. I know. Any thoughts on this one? Am I reading into it too much?
Yeah, I don't really have any insight into that. I just wanted to let you know that you're still streaming that newscast in the upper corner of your
Ah!
of your screen.
Thanks. That was natural. Yeah, I had the Zoom chat window covering that, so I couldn't see it. Thank you. All right. So yeah, that was just my two cents there. That
Did they actually, I didn't read this announcement, but do they actually say, oh, they do alternative services for customers, so they're going to send you to Marketplace Professional Services. Okay. So, and has that always been a separate section like that? Marketplace Professional Services, or was everything just lumped in together like into the marketplace before?
That's it. So when I the professional service, they have like managed services, they have SaaS, they have professional services as categories there. And then you send private offers through this really convoluted process that's very requires 25 clicks to send an offer.
Oh, it does even say consider posting on Upwork or Freelancer
Yeah.
as an alternative. Interesting.
Yeah. So yeah. That's that. What else? Yeah, so next announcement, I think it's like the last one I got was yeah, just an update on Atmos. We merged this in a few weeks ago. I forget if I announced it or not. But this is something that we've wanted to do for some time. And it's basically formalizing a convention or pattern that we've been doing at Cloud Posse for the better part of our existence. So, a pattern that's worked well for us with managing so many repos is if you go to like any Cloud Posse repo, let's say for Terraform. Oops, this was not the repo I wanted to go to. Like EKS cluster. Here you'll see we have this README YAML file, and it's basically a structured YAML file describing what we want in the README. And if you want to have a standardized brand across all your repositories and you want to centralize your documentation, like on docs.cloudposse.com, when you go to reference, we've centralized our documentation for all of our modules here. And it would have been untenable to keep that documentation two places. And parsing Markdown is not a scalable way of doing it. So we long ago knew we wanted to get there. It took us years before we had the documentation centralized like that, but we finally do, and that is made possible. But because we have all of our Markdown structured like this in a YAML file. Now every field here is arbitrary. This is a schema that we've come up that made sense for us. You don't have to use that schema. And what we've been using is something called the build harness to do that, which has roots in like how we did things at Cloud Posse in the very, very early days. Everything was driven by make files because, well, you can compile massive projects like the Linux kernel. We should be able to compile infrastructure with Terraform and make. And it worked well in the beginning, but it does not scale for infrastructure as code. So Atmos is where we went. And we left behind the build harness and everything we were doing that with that. So at Cloud Posse, we have a project called the build harness. And that is a collection of basically make files that we were using for a long time to standardize how we do things in our repositories. Well, that doesn't work that well. It's not very cross-platform. And trying to, get this working on Windows and WSL and Mac and Linux and different versions of Mac meant that we have all these crazy hacks in here where we're like using the make file to run a Docker image that calls a make file that runs the tool so that we could get it to work everywhere, which is just insane. So we finally got around to finishing up something like that that we wanted to do in Atmos, and that is moving the README generation into Atmos natively. So this is kind of what the configuration is. You would put this in your atmos.yaml. You can have as many different types of documents you want to generate. This is an arbitrary key. And you specify any number of data sources. So here we're reading the data source of readme.yaml, and then we're using this Go template, which is actually Gauntlet under the hood. So it has the full power of Gauntlet that we were already using in the build harness. And then you can output that somewhere. It has been native. We are importing Terraform docs as a Go package, so it natively supports Terraform documentation if you want to use it. You don't have to use Terraform docs. It is an optional thing. And here's an example of like generating, for example, the README and generating some release notes. Like if you had a change log written in YAML, you could generate release notes .md from that. We are in the process of rolling this out at Cloud Posse. So all of our repositories are going to be updated to use this. And the other really badass thing, because we are using Atmos and Atmos config, we can now centralize this configuration, which we're doing here already at in our component organization. So if I go to components, we use the .github community files repository. This is a special repository that GitHub recommends you use to centralize configurations and things like that. So inside of like our GitHub folder here, we have a Atmos. Oh yeah, we rolled that. We rolled it back because it failed yesterday when we tried to do it. But no, I'm in the wrong organization. Rollback of that, but I think we kept it in here. I want to see Atmos. Yeah. So here's an example of a centralized Atmos configuration file. So now we can manage the configuration for Atmos for all of our 200 repositories in one place, the things that we want everywhere. So now we can replace what we're doing with the make file and have the commands that we run with that centralized and for running tests, initializing, cleaning up, and we can continue to expand and improve this without having to update all of our repos and using the make file hack that we were doing before. So just us trying to use our own tooling with what we do to make things easier and hope it benefits others as well. All right. Any questions on that? All right. Then with that, we are into Q&A. Let's see. Any questions today? This is an open-ended portion of the office hours. No more prepared materials. Any questions, good. We've had many people ask about, who are like junior DevOps engineers, ask about, how they should, progress in their career or what they should focus on. We've had others, bring up questions on, how to accomplish various things with Terraform or on Kubernetes. So you have about, 24 awesome people here. You can ask a question and get an answer.
I got a question.
Go for it, Wazy.
So thanks, Eric. My name is Wazy Lanier. I work mainly in security. I've been in security for over like in IT just generally over 18 years. And over the past few years, I've started to get into the DevSecOps, realm. So my main community has always been just security and hacking, like in, all that DEF CON stuff and DerbyCon and whatever. But now that I'm switching to a different, I wouldn't even say like area, just like focus, right? I'm always curious if anyone has just like a general like, hey, these are all the things that really exist in these realms, right? Like I know like CNCF and this and well, a lot of it might just be, I mean, 80% might be things I've already seen. I'm just trying to make sure that I expand my horizons in the more appropriate community now, right? That's why I joined this as well. So that'd be great. If anyone has anything to drop there?
Well, I mean, first thing that just comes to mind, since I just came back from that conference was, like DevOps Days. I thought that was a really interesting conference series they have all around the country and different parts of the world. What I think is really interesting is it was a very different conference format than your conventional like AWS reInvent or mainstream conferences. I think that they had some very different kinds of talks that were not even necessarily DevOps related, and I appreciated them.
Yeah, I've heard of DevOps Days. I also like I help host a security conference every year here in Omaha.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously you found office hours, so that's a good start. And we
Right.
have our Slack community. There's many other similar Slack communities. Like HangOps is another really big one, very active. You can check out.
Awesome.
I guess
Thanks.
it's a little bit like, yeah, it's a little open-ended. Sometimes it might depend on specifically the problem that you're
Yeah.
in one of those domains that you mentioned.
Yeah, I'd say like, yeah, I know it's a very tough thing to really generalize like that without having like a real deep conversation on like my whole background and stuff.
I just know
So,
that I've gone to reInvent so many times, and
yeah.
here in SweetOps, I'm a big fish in a small pond, and I can kind of we all have our kindred spirits in some way or similar backgrounds. It's easy to talk, and then I go to reInvent and I describe what I do, and it's like, huh, interesting. What's Terraform? Never heard about it. And it's like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, cloud, DevOps, infrastructure, all different.
Yeah, and like there was that someone pointed out the was it DevOps Projects YouTube? I watch him quite a bit. There was a few other ones that were along those same lines, and that's I guess all my YouTube is now, so.
Yeah, I remember this roadmap that SH would come up before, kind of just like a mind map almost of all the concepts.
Yeah, it's that is actually really great.
I hadn't looked at it in a few years. I don't know how accurate it is anymore, but if they're keeping it updated, but it certainly helped me 5 or 6 years ago to get my mind around the DevOps space.
Awesome. Yeah, this is great. And even if it isn't updated, right? Like it'll when I research those things, it like relevant materials will come up, right?
Anchor links basically to start exploring.
De definitely
Awesome.
don't spend a lot of time learning Chef and Puppet right now.
Yeah. Yeah,
No.
this is oh God. Oh hey, Michael, I thought I was looking for you. I was gonna say this is the time of office hours where we ask Michael if he has any questions. But I didn't see you. Hey Michael, how's it going?
I had the wrong microphone selected. I was in listen mode for quite a bit there, but no, I may have missed the first part of Andy's, or I think it's Wasey's question. But if you're also looking for resources to learn DevOps and not come out of a lot of cash, if your local library has a connection to LinkedIn Learning, I would say get a library card and see if you can access LinkedIn Learning for free. Well, a lot of city libraries, county libraries. They offer free access to LinkedIn Learning through their digital portal, like a web portal through your library website. And I only offer that because a lot of times I will see people who pick up resources. Like I reference roadmap.sh/devops quite a bit, but it is a path, but sometimes you need a little bit more guidance if you're following a path. So you can go to LinkedIn and there are paths. I think if you even search like well, AI powered coaching, that's one option there. But if you search for DevOps, I believe there are DevOps paths and there's paths for particular tools. Like, I mean, I don't want to self promote, but I've got a path on Jenkins, I've got a path on GitHub Actions, and like there's other tools out there that will kind of walk you through from beginning.